This weekend marks the 10th anniversary of Hurricane Katrina. It was 10 years ago that we watched those horrible images as levees were breached and New Orleans was flooded. Those images of people stranded on the roofs of their house waiting to be rescued, of people escaping into boats to an uncertain future, of the nightmare at the Superdome where people sought refuge in deplorable conditions. And then, of course, there were so many who died who were missing. Now, the good news is, 10 years later, much has happened. Levees have been rebuilt and strengthened. Many have been able to rebuild their homes. Many businesses are again flourishing. Arts community is vibrant. There are parts of the city that have been revitalized and restored and are fully restored, functioning, happy neighborhoods. But there's also not so good news. There have been several articles in the press, both the New York Times and online in various places, about how this recovery has not been equal and even, how there's been disparity in it. Those who are African American and poor have not fared as well as those who are white and middle class. Relief money, federal funds, if received, are not always enough to rebuild a house. And the bureaucracy surrounding those funds is difficult to negotiate without a lawyer. But those who are poor can't afford a lawyer. So there are some neighborhoods, like the Lower Ninth Ward, where many houses have not yet been rebuilt, where there are many people who have not been able to return to their neighborhood, in some cases a neighborhood where families have lived for generations. And there are parts, particularly of that neighborhood, that remain deserted. This is, for me, heartbreaking to read about. It's difficult to understand how 10 years later, all has not been put right. And it's even more difficult to realize that, again, there seems to be a boundary around race. That for those who are white and middle class, things have turned out better than for those who are African American and poor. There is a racial divide in this nation, and this is yet another example of that. We, like every age before us, seems to find a way to live in a society where there are boundaries, where there are insiders and there are outsiders. I think it may be our human condition, and as old as we are. I think it's also true that we can find ourselves caught in a system that exists without our necessarily even being aware of it. That sometimes those boundaries even crop up in the midst of the best of intentions, even in the midst of holy endeavors. We see that in our gospel today. In the first century, it was true that there were divisions, there were insiders and there were outsiders, and it was true that they could spring up from an attempt to lead lives that were holy, that were faithful. So in our gospel this morning, the Pharisees are annoyed with Jesus, as they so often are. And they are annoyed that his disciples and Jesus are not washing their hands before they eat. Now that might seem trivial to us, or it might seem like that information our mothers taught us, wash your hands before you eat. But that's not the kind of washing we're talking about. This is not about that literal cleanliness of washing away germs. Of course, germs are not a first century concept, but this washing is not about that cleanliness. It's about ritual purity. It's about following the dietary laws. These are foreign to most of us, I suspect, but to the Pharisees, they were critically important. Those interpretations of the law, those rules, defined the people. Defined the people as God's people. Helped to understand what is the covenant that God has made with them, and how do they live that faithfully. There's a clue in the Greek word that we hear translated as defiled. That word in Greek is koinos, meaning common, ordinary, as in not sanctified, not made holy. What the Pharisees are trying to do is to have all of life be made holy as God is holy. That's the call to the people of Israel. As the Lord your God is holy, you should be holy. And so when something becomes undefiled, in their interpretation, it is not holy. And something needs to happen. There needs to be either a washing or a sacrifice offered, or a period of time has to pass. And then things can once again be not defiled, can be holy. So I think we need to be gentle with the Pharisees and not overly critical. Their motivations are good. They want to know, how do we live lives of holiness? How do we live as God intends? What they're doing is they are following something called the tradition of the elders, which is a legal interpretation of the law. The law was given by God, and then around it arose an oral tradition of interpretation. Here's the law. Now here are the details of how you follow that law. And the oral tradition intended to explain how to lead faithful lives and included instructions around ritual washing of both food and people before eating. Jesus, however, sees in this something more complicated, and he rejects that oral tradition and focuses on God's law, not on the human interpretation. He quotes the prophet Isaiah saying, "This people honors me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me." Jesus sees that the consequence of the action of the Pharisees is actually to exclude people and to set the Pharisees themselves up as the ones who determine what is holy, what is acceptable, who is clean and who is not. And so Jesus sees that their actions are creating insiders and outsiders. It's creating a boundary. They are controlling a boundary around holiness, around access to God. And so Jesus condemns this as exclusionary and teaches a new teaching. It's not about what you eat. It's about what's in your heart. One cannot be acceptable to God through ritual purity, through the right kind of washing. God doesn't care so much about what we eat and how we wash. But God cares a lot about our behavior, about how we treat one another, about the intentions in our hearts. So Jesus goes on to teach that nothing from outside us can come into us and make us unclean, can defile us. But what comes out of our heart can. And he offers this list of those things which can defile us, and the things are all ones that come from our heart. Fornication, theft, murder, adultery, avarice, wickedness, deceit, licentiousness, envy, slander, pride, and folly. Those all come from within, from inside our being, from our hearts, if you will. And all those things harm us, our relationship with God, and our relationship with our neighbors. This is echoed in our epistle this morning from the letter to James. James begins by telling us that every good gift comes from God, that God is generous, and that every generous act of giving that we might undertake comes from God. We are acting as God when we care for one another. In doing so, we make manifest the generosity of God, and we become a kind of first fruits. James tells us ultimately that faith is fine, but we have to be doers of the word. We can't just be hearers. To only hear and not act is not what we're called to do. Faith leads us actively to love our neighbor. What we do, James tells us, matters. And so James exhorts us in this passage from the letter to be quick to listen and slow to speak, to hear one another, to encounter a person and find out who they are, listen to what they're saying, rather than just speaking. We're called to be slow to anger. Anger's not the way to be righteous. And James tells us that true religion is known in action, in caring for orphans and widows, those who are the most vulnerable. That call to care for orphans and widows harkens back to Hebrew scripture. The prophets came proclaiming, "Care for those in your midst who most need the care." Orphans and widows who in the society of that time had so little way to care for themselves. Be mindful of them. And so we're called to put our faith into action, loving those in our midst, especially the least. And we're promised by James that those who act from the heart, those who are doers of the word, are blessed in their doing. As Jesus calls us to have pure hearts, So James calls us to have pure religion, to not blindly follow human rules, not listening only, but acting, and ultimately putting faith into action, action that springs from the purity of our hearts. In our collect this morning, we just prayed, graft in our hearts the love of your name, increase in us true religion, nourish us with all goodness, and bring forth in us the fruit of good works. We're asking God to graft in our hearts love for God, to implant that love within us, to abide with us in that love. And that love then increases in us true religion, what James is talking about. It nourishes us with all goodness and then brings forth good works, that faith leads to the good works that James and the collect talk about. Heaven knows our world is full of boundaries that exclude and divide, boundaries of injustice and oppression. The world is full of evil intentions and actions. And we are being called to break, to act from our pure hearts, to break down all that divides us, to be loving and caring with those we meet, and especially mindful and loving to those who are most vulnerable. So on this day, I hope and pray that we might be a community always where we are slow to speak and quick to listen. A community where we consider how what we say and what we do might exclude or welcome those in our midst. A community where we are active doers of the work of the word in the world. Now, I know at times it can seem that the challenges of this world, of this age, are so great, it might lead us to ask, what could I possibly do? My actions seem so insignificant in the face of such great challenge. But I think what James and Jesus are both telling us is that we don't do this alone. We do this in community. And to not underestimate the power of what we do. That my action, your action, together with all of our actions, by all faithful people, has the power to transform the world. For with God, all things are possible. As I mentioned before, I often find the daily meditations offered by the Society of St. John the Evangelist in Cambridge, a monastic community in the Episcopal Church, I often find their daily meditations offered through email and Facebook to be very helpful to me, very edifying, and to often in a few words encapsulate what I'm taking 12 minutes to say to you. So it was this week that Brother David Ryhoff, in a meditation called Contribute, said this. It's important to do something even though we find it difficult to imagine how our small contribution can have any impact at all on this immense and hopelessly complicated problem. Leave that to God. So to remember that we're called to act from pure hearts, to be doers of the word, but not to let the immensity of the problem stop us. It can be easy to say, this is too great, and become paralyzed by that. Leave that to God. Turn that over to God. But act in our small ways as a community of faith, and we can transform the world. And so may we ask God to open our hearts, for the Spirit to abide in us, making our hearts pure, and our actions always loving and just. Amen.